There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to...
Welcome to What a Week, KSQD's Listener's Digest of all the news from this last week that you really need to know. I'm Tony Russomano.
And I'm Eric Nelson, and have we got a show for you.
Now, you can't be well informed unless you are informed well. And that's where What a Week comes in.
For the next hour, we're going to dive deep into what's been going on over the last 7 days, giving you a quick rundown of what's happening here in Santa Cruz and in the rest of the world.
And because sometimes you just want to get away from it all, we'll play you some music designed to soothe your soul and bring a smile to your face.
So turn up that radio, fire up that internet browser, and get ready for another edition of KSQD's What a Week. Well, what a week indeed. And this, in fact, is a very special, Tony, a special what?
It is a special bleach blonde, bad built, butch body edition of What a Week.
And what does that cryptic code stand for? Well, stay tuned and you will find out. But let's get right to it. Wallace Bain is joining us. And
Woo-hoo.
this is a long-awaited... In case anyone in Santa Cruz does not know it, Lookout Santa Cruz won a coveted Pulitzer Award.
The prestigious coveted Pulitzer Award.
I think what, Wallace, it was within 1 hour that I sent you an email inviting you to do the show and assuming that you'd be in a drunken stupor by Saturday, but you declined my invitation, but I'm hoping it wasn't due to being in a drunken stupor.
Thank you, Eric. I think I'm still in a drunken stupor, actually.
Most important question, how many bottles of champagne did the Lookout staff go through that day?
312, I think.
312,
like that.
Not bad for what the national media called a tiny news organization.
Tiny, yes.
How many
times
did that word appear in the national headlines? That will be the official name now of it. It's Tiny Lookout Santa Cruz.
Well, this is definitely a Pulitzer adjacent edition. This is as close as we'll ever get to the glory. But I got to ask, how did this happen? I mean, leaving aside the fact that Lookout did fantastic award-winning and, yes, national prestigious award-winning reporting, a lot of great work goes unrecognized, but you guys got it done. And I'm just curious how this is a organization beyond bribes, beyond anything, but you did it. How did this happen?
Well, Eric, to be honest with you, I couldn't have been any more surprised that morning than if I had been named Miss America. I mean, it was so out of the skies. It was a comet out of nowhere, at least for me. You have to kind of apply for the Pulitzer. You have to get their attention, and you have to kind of say, here is our application. Here is our package. Take a look at it. Our managing editor, Tamsin McMahon, did that, but she didn't tell anybody at our organization, including Ken Doctor, who is our CEO.
You're kidding me. She cowboyed that through? Because I've seen your the thing is great.
Yeah.
It's beautifully laid out. It's, a great, it should be published. They should be selling that at the bookshop. Santa Cruz is just the storm, is the wrapper.
It's a wonderful thing.
But
right.
She did that as a rogue?
She put that together, and in the interest of not getting our hopes up, I guess, or creating high expectations, she just sent it in and didn't really tell anybody. And so she got the call on the Sunday, and she called Ken on that Sunday afternoon. We got a message that afternoon that saying, okay, we need a Zoom call on Monday morning, all hands on deck, no excuses, you have to be there, don't worry, it's not bad news.
Oh, that's what I thought. First thing well, there we go. And that would start with,
dibs on the
coffee
machine.
We're a family here at Lookout, and you're like heading for the Xerox machines for resumes, so that wasn't the stated purpose of the meeting.
And I thought, what is this? Okay, I had no idea what it was, and I didn't really think about it. But at 10 a.m. that morning, we started the Zoom call, and Tamsin just kind of said in a very matter-of-fact way, we've won the Pulitzer Prize. And there was, I don't know, 30 seconds of just dead silence. I was kind of thinking, okay, this is a bizarre prank, but what's the purpose of a prank like this?
Is that like the Northern California Pulitzer Prize? You know, the regionals?
No, but you're thinking that, oh, yeah, come on. What are you, what, that's a really bad joke to play on us. You know, what's, and then you're going to bring out a toy thing and you're going to say, well, of course we didn't win, but, and then it slowly dawned on everybody she was serious.
Did you say Pulitzer Prize or Tulitzer Prize?
But Tamsin, if she's saying it, I mean, she's got national, in fact, international journalistic creds, right? I mean,
she does.
From the Globe and Mail.
She does, and she's not really a jokester, really. So,
all those Canadians.
It was a moment of cognitive confusion, but it slowly began to sink in, and we learned that it was because of the storm coverage in 23, and then just the next hour, we just kind of all gathered together around the table to see the Pulitzer announcement. And it was even more astounding as time went on that we beat the LA Times, which has, what, 300 some odd reporters in their newsroom. And we have, you know, 10. It was just a surreal giddy experience.
And I love the New York Times thing where they, you know, the New York Times and the Washington Post, because they list themselves first and then it'd be look out, you know, like they could tell they were not quite like, what, you know,
what is this?
What's how, who?
Let me geek out on journalism here. Let's go back to the day of the storms. Tell me what was happening in the newsroom. Tell me how the stories were assigned and how the reporters, 10 reporters, 10 writers, were marshaled into the field and provided the kind of coverage that won this incredible award.
Well, we were, this was New Year's, you'll remember, of January 23. And of course, it went on for almost 3 months. And I think at the beginning, we were all sort of trying to be as flexible as we could in what we had to cover. Now, I was hired as just essentially the arts and culture guy, right? So in some other context, I might have said, it's not really my thing, you know, you guys go at it. But of course, I couldn't do that on such a small staff. So we really just kind of looked at the challenges in front of us every day and figured we just had to kind of make decisions about what should be covered and what should not be covered. And I just kind of like a good soldier, you know, just sort of took orders.
I remember calling to try to, you know, to see if you could drop by and give us an update. And you were out in the middle of nowhere. And unfortunately, the lookout news chopper that's supposed to ferry you all over that wasn't an operative that week. So you're dealing with the same washed out roads that everybody and everyone else is cowering in their homes, hoping a redwood doesn't fall in their homes. Yet you guys are out fanning everywhere, heading directly into the literal eye of the storm.
So who was calling the shots? Who was on the desk making the decisions about who to send where?
Well, Tamsin was a big part of that, and Ken was also very much involved. We were scanning the situation and keeping a close eye and looking at social media and and, you know, we had some young reporters in our young journalists in our newsroom who were just so I was just so amazed at their energy, at their commitment to this. You know, we have a young reporter named Max Chun who was just all over the place. Christopher Neely was out there all over the place. Kevin Painshot, our photographer, was just, I mean, he had. In 2020, Kevin had, he was working for the Sentinel at the time, shoulder to shoulder with the great Shmuel Thaler, was out there covering the CZU tragedy as it was every day. And so Kevin was already kind of seasoned in that kind of...
He was in disaster mode.
I'm sure the adrenaline was flowing. Nothing gets it flowing more than a breaking news story. And I was so glad to hear you say that Ken Doctor, the founder, was actually in the trenches calling the shots, because... Boy, that is what, I don't care how long somebody has spent on Mahogany Row, when the big story breaks, they're out in the newsroom. They're working it, and they're bringing to bear all the experience they've brought into that job, or decades of experience.
Mahogany Row, that sounds like something out of the front page. Is that like, what's Mahogany Row?
What's Mahogany Row? Mahogany Row is where the executives live.
Oh, I see. That's great. I just wanted to flag that 1920s
bit
of art.
Ken is that's his background, and that's kind of why he started this whole thing. I mean, his orientation is from the newsroom. So he was right there in the middle of it and kind of directing everything.
Well, my immediate thought when this happened was just first, of course, utter jealousy that such a wonderful award, a life-transforming award. Geez, I would like to get one of those, but in my field, there's no such thing. And unfortunately, there's no, what a week, let's just say, is sort of sailing under it. But instantly it turned to, wow, this is so fantastic for not only Lookout, but for Santa Cruz, just for our community. Sure. Of Santa Cruz. It puts us, I sent it out to, I have friends at The New Yorker, I was all over it saying, hey, look what we did. And I had the sense of community because it was a win for all of us who are doing anything in media in Santa Cruz. But this is the thing that kind of, I immediately went to the Sentinel, checked over on Good Times, checked other media outlets. Not only was there nothing, to my knowledge, to this date, there still has not been anything. Good Times hasn't mentioned it. The Sentinel published a letter to the editor that mentioned it. Really, it's like, come on, folks. Something like this benefits. The rising tide lifts all boats, use a storm metaphor here. And the fact that that people don't see this. I know the Mighty K-Squid, we put a thing out immediately on our Facebook page giving all the congrats. And yes, we stole the picture of you guys swilling champagne in your conference room. But for us, and I'm speaking for everyone at the station, we just felt this was the best thing ever. And attention and congratulations must be paid. So if we can do anything on this, what a week. We're trying to make up for the shocking lack of congratulations that you receive from basically every other media outlet in Santa Cruz.
Well, thank you for that, Eric. I really appreciate that. As the day and the week went on, it just, the enormity of this, we're 3.5 years old. This is a toddler organization, and we win the top prize in the industry. It's just shocking.
Well, the model, though, that is also Ken's business model of doing this, this is a bold swing. And you and Tamsin, we did a show on Exploring Santa Cruz. I think you remember we discussed the business model. So
yeah.
I've been very attentive to what you're trying to do, but it's not what you're trying to do. You've done it now.
Yeah.
Has this been reflected in an uptick of subscriptions? I mean, are you seeing any movement now in people becoming aware, locals saying, oh, well, you know what, it's time to subscribe to this thing?
I'm not sure about that because that's not...
Church and state.
Yeah, church and state. But I have certainly noticed a more openness towards what Lookout is and a more, mispronunciation of Outlook has pretty much gone away.
there's more to the Pulitzer than just being first, fast, and factual. There's the coverage, the humanity, the empathy that the winning entry must bring in, because we're dealing with an immense tragedy affecting thousands and thousands of people in Santa Cruz County. Talk about that. How did that kind of coverage affect the individuals who are writing those stories, and how did you approach covering a story that had so many people in such dire straits for so long a period of time? You can't just rely on facts and figures. You had to bring heart and soul into it.
Yeah, that was a lot of that. My role in this was really to be, I'm the oldest person in the newsroom other than Ken, I guess, but I've also been here the longest. my role was kind of the perspective guy, the step back guy, the big picture guy. And while many of my colleagues were out there in the mud, I was in the mud too, by the way, but they were kind of reporting on things as they were happening. My part of it was to kind of step back and talk to people and really underscore what this was doing to their lives. And, you know, I wrote about Capitola in January when it was kind of smacked around by that storm, and how the downtown merchants there were just so in love with the what they call the jewel box there, and how this was such an injury to them that I really wanted to underscore to our local readers that Capitola needs you now. They need you to come here now and spend your money and do business with them. So,
well, this is a win, you know, and I think we're going to shift gears to the usual. This is also a win for the people who lived through it. This is this august body saying your experience, what you went through in Santa Cruz, is noteworthy, and this award really reflects, I mean, the community and the people in the mountains and the people in Capitola. It's a recognition that what you went through was not trivial. Wouldn't you agree? So to me, this award,
sure,
again, another reason why, sure, our local media should see it as such. It was an award to Santa Cruz, not just obviously for your reporting, which is what it was for, but what you were reporting on and the experiences of those people.
Right. One of the columns that I had written during that time was that how when outsiders talk about California and natural disasters, they bring up earthquakes and they bring up wildfires, and how flooding and storms are kind of the Jan Brady of natural disasters. They didn't kind of get the attention and the respect, and this was every bit as powerful and life-altering as those other tragedies.
For reporters in Santa Cruz, there are two seasons. There's Gore-Tex season in the winter, and there's Nomex season in the summer.
Right.
Well, let's clear the air here. And something, this is not a request by you, but I did crop up. Let's just put it this way. I think you'll know exactly why I'm playing this in a second. You're listening to What a Week on KSQT Santa Cruz, KSQT Prundale. Tony Russomano, Eric Nelson, and we're joined by award-winning journalist. Now we can absolutely say it. Yeah, the award-winning.
The prestigious award.
The prestigious, with a capital, the Wallace Bain. So we'll come back and we'll call it tragedies, but just dealing with the news of the last week. It's really tough.
Oh, we got some good news coming up.
Yeah, I guess so. That's right.
Whenever Paul thinks of rain, swallows fall in a wave and tap on his window with their beaks. And when Paul thinks of snow, soft winds blow round his head, and his phone rings just once late at night, like a bird calling out, wake up, Paul, don't be scared, don't believe you're all. Thank you. makeup on, whisper clouds floating by, and the seeds falling softly from the branches of the trees.
Wallace, that's on you. Who was that?
That was the Handsome Family. That was one of them. That was my earworm of the week, as I do
your
in
pick
my
to click.
Weekly newsletter. Yes, thanks for playing that. I really, really love that stuff.
Well, now we go from the sublime, as they say, to the ridiculous.
Thrush, the technological hierarchy for the removal of undesirables and the subjugation of humanity.
In the news again.
Back in the news, Elon Musk, we just can't quit you. We have three different little Tesla bits. Well, last week we went on about watch out that your big car, your Hondas or whatever, are watching you and your data is being shared indiscriminately, and that's become a thing. But guess what? Reuters last week, hard on the heels of what a week's investigation into that. Well, Tesla, those video cameras that are in all the Teslas for self-driving, also are filming you. And apparently, yes, those videos are being shared and, commented upon and used as memes in the San Mateo office of Tesla. This is, again, a Reuters report.
Not just interior car videos, because there are cameras looking outside of the car. So when your car is parked in the garage, Tesla is actually taking video of what is going on in your garage.
Including, from the Reuters thing, some of the recordings caught Tesla customers in embarrassing situations. One ex-employee described a video of a man approaching a vehicle completely naked.
Okay. You got your washing machine in the garage, strip down and, throw it in the washer with the rest of the stuff.
And what happens with these images, according to several ex-employees, these 20 to 30-somethings in the San Mateo office of Tesla shared the screenshots, some marked up with Adobe Photoshop, with emojis, et cetera, and quote, this is a quote from one of these former pranksters, if you saw something cool that would get a reaction, you post it, and then later on, during your break, people would come up and say, hey, I saw what you posted. That was funny. People who got promoted to lead positions shared a lot of these funny items and gained notoriety for being funny.
This sounds like what Enron did years ago, a couple of decades ago, when they were charging so much money for electricity in California, and they were passing around notes that had come into the Enron headquarters from grandmothers in California who were pleading for some sanity in the pricing of electricity. And these guys in their suspenders and power ties were chuckling all over it.
Well, here's a kicker, as you trained now, award-winning journalists would say. About 3 years ago, some employees stumbled upon and shared a video of a unique submersible vehicle that was parked inside a garage. Nicknamed Wet Willie, this sub had been featured in the 1977 James Bond film, The Spy Who Loved Me. Guess what? The vehicle's owner? Elon Musk, who bought it for about $1 million at an auction, and the last line, it is not clear whether Musk was aware of the video or that it had been shared. Really quick, speaking of Teslas, now they're visible from space. There's such a backlog of unsold Teslas that, especially in Germany now, that satellite imagery is basically showing 40 car transporters per hour arriving, 300 to 400 trips a day with unsold cars. They use their Teslas using the former airfield to sort out the newly built vehicles so they can figure out what to do with them. They might have been able to deliver them to Hertz, but in the third facet of our Elon Musk Thrush story, Hertz bought a bunch of them, and that was a big deal for Hertz. Now they're backtracking. They're not going to buy them, and now they're trying to get rid of the ones that they bought, and there's discount Hertz vehicles being sold, but the poor people who are buying them are finding out, wait a minute, they're Teslas, and they have the Tesla-related damages on them, and, they're not very happy about this. So no, people are getting bargain Teslas used from Hertz, besides the cigarette butts and what the detritus you find or bodies under the rear seat of the car. They're also finding holes, et cetera, and things falling off them. So they're not such a good bargain. So we got to love.
Well, you can see them from space. Now, isn't Elon's original Red Roadster still orbiting in space?
That's one that still works. But imagine a future aliens.
Still playing Rocket Man.
Yeah, but still playing Rocket Man with that. But ladies and gentlemen, what can we say? Well, speaking of mega disasters and somebody who's high on their own supply, yes, Elon Musk, Francis Ford Coppola, Wallace, you're an arts cult, his new film Megalopolis just premiered at Cannes. And I'm mixed feelings about this. One hand, it's Coppola, he's an insane artist who spent $120 million of his own money to realize his dream. Attention must be paid. Applause must be. Don't you agree? It's just the concept of it.
On the other hand, nobody knows what this movie is about.
Well, there's that. Apparently, there was an interview.
Including Coppola.
Giancarlo Esposito, a.k.a. Fring in Breaking Bad, is in the movie. And this is a quote. This doesn't bode well. On set, I didn't know what was going to happen. Francis allowed us to be free and then gave us a directive. I went, where is he going? But at the end of the movie, I came to tears. I got it. I'm not supposed to know everything, but neither is Francis. Okay.
It's a riddle wrapped inside an enigma.
Well, Rachel Handler in New York Magazine just did a thing about it, which can give you if you want to get a vague idea of what's going on here. So here's her, Tony, maybe I'll, do you see that part?
Yeah, sure.
So the question is, okay, what's the plot of the movie?
Now, okay. The log line is as follows. A genius artist with the power to stop time fights an arch-conservative mayor to save the dying modern world and inspire hope, told as a Roman epic.
And that's the official log line.
Yeah.
How was the writing?
Well, the script was rewritten at least 300 times, according to Coppola, and that is apparent.
How does it look?
The movie looks cheap as hell, like the wet seal of Coppola films. It's not at all beautiful to behold, which is a real shame because its ideas are bad too, and, well, so is the sound. The ADR does not always match up with characters' mouths.
Ooh, bad dubbing is never a good idea.
There is a fake baby in this movie to rival American Sniper's fake baby in several scenes.
Do you remember American Sniper? There was like the war, clearly like the Walmart baby thing in American Doll. Well, one of the deals in, what's the deal with a guy who gets up from his seat in the middle of the movie?
That's a random audience member. He got up from his
seat.
In
the screening, a random audience member gets up from his seat.
Stood up, middle of the movie. He brought a microphone and a flashlight on stage with him. He stood in front of Adam Driver's giant face on the screen, and then he lip-synced a pre-recorded question about fearing the future, and then Adam Driver answered it, right? The movie, Adam Driver answered it. Then the guy walked off stage, never to be seen again.
And the friend who sat next to the correspondent at Cannes said, she assumed that the guy was getting up to protest. I was fine with that.
I wonder if now, is there going to be a live performance at every screening of this movie?
And another film news, there's a Beach Boys documentary coming out Disney is putting out. And Disney, Wallace, you know about this, how they embargo things. They don't want critics to talk about things in advance. So Disney made it clear to Jason Bailey from the New York Times or wherever, freelance writer, Disney would like to make certain that I respect the fans and I do not reveal any spoilers or detailed plot points from this Beach Boys documentary. So the internet kind of went in. So what are some of the internet plot points that we could not reveal?
At all costs, please avoid revealing what a mega guy Mike Love is.
No, mega douche Mike Love is.
I don't want to say mega douche.
Well,
but,
I do.
All right, mega douche Mike Love
mega
is.
Mega douche too, right?
Yeah, mega douche indeed. Yeah, his lawyers are hovering in helicopters over us as we speak.
Don't you dare spoil which kind of girls they wish they all could be.
Going into it blind and assuming everything will turn out fine with these hippies who moved in with Dennis.
Fun, fun, fun until
beep
Redacted
boop
takes the beep boop away. So those are the various plot points.
You never know what's coming up with
you
that.
You never know what's going to...
You're saving the surprise.
It's going to the surprise, surprise, surprise.
Are there spoilers in the Beach Boys story after all these years?
No,
it's hard to imagine.
What can I say?
That may be the ultimate spoiler.
We report, you decide.
I think there's more darkness and light than light in the Beach Boys story. It'll be interesting to see how Disney wrestles with all that
well,
stuff.
Well, it's a Ron Howard, I think, directed the documentary, so it's going to be pretty much the official,
Official,
unfortunately, Mike Love cut of this particular story. Oh, well, why don't we take a musical break as we're wont to do here? Dua Lipa, is that how I pronounce it? I'm pretty terrible. So thank God I've got the arts cultural editor of Lookout here to correct my horrendous pronunciation. Brand new record called Radical Optimism. We like to play good music before we head straight into political rapids, which we're going to do in just a second. But let's clear the air here with Dua Lipa.
KSQD thanks Housing Matters for their support, hosting the second annual March to End Homelessness at 10 a.m. on Saturday, May 18th, downtown Santa Cruz. The march brings together a coalition of businesses, nonprofits, and hundreds of supporters with the goal of ending homelessness. Details at housingmatterssc.org. Thank you, Housing Matters, for supporting Community Radio K-Squid 90.7, 89.7, and 89.5 FM.
going on right now.
Yeah. And now for something completely different. Well, it's time for another episode of Real Housewives of the Supreme Court. And we've certainly talked about Ginni Thomas, who, is a basically absolute fanatic insurrectionist and doing everything in her corpulent power to text Mark Meadows and let's go get and hang Pence. Let's get him. You're totally all over it. And amazingly, Clarence Thomas is not recusing himself, but one-upsmanship, I guess, even the Supreme Court. How could it get worse? Well, Judge Alito, turns out that his wife, Tony, why don't we walk through the chain of events here?
Well, there was you may have heard about it. There was this
back
party.
In the day. This is right around the time.
Riot, attempted takeover, usurpation of the democratic process, the Capitol takeover. There was a little brouhaha that occurred in the Alito
neighborhood. Arlington, Virginia.
The neighbors and apparently the Alitos disagree on some things, such as whether it's permissible to overthrow the government by force.
Well, one neighbor did have a sign on the street about 50 feet from where the kids go on their school, but with an F-Trump, and I don't think the dashes were there. Mrs. Alito brought it up with the neighbor, and then things escalated from there. Then the neighbor put up a sign personally addressing Mrs. Alito and blamed her for the January 6th attack.
Well, one thing led to another. There was a verbal altercation in which the neighbor said something quite unkind.
Yes, a word that starts with C, and we won't go any further. Then Mrs. Alito got really upset and hung an American flag upside down, which is the symbol of insurrection.
I never knew that. Yes. I mean, upside down flag I always knew was like a symbol of distress for mariners, ships at sea.
And this thing sort of lay dormant, but the New York Times got a hold of a picture of the flag. And Alito does what any good upstanding chud Republican would do, is of course immediately blamed his wife for everything.
Wife under the bus.
It's the Menendez. Actually, Menendez is a Democrat. He just did it too. All the gold bars in the basement. That's my wife's deal, but that's a separate thing. So let's just say venality does sometimes cross party lines. Not often, but in this case.
Can work together.
Joy Reid is one of those writers who you don't have to ask, what do you really think? Her comment was, Samuel Alito is so brazenly corrupt, it would be laughable if it wasn't so serious. He and Thomas are beyond embarrassments to the judiciary. They are small, low, mean, cowardly, backwards, insurrectionist men hiding behind their insurrectionist wives and dreaming of oligarchy. And Chief Justice Roberts is apparently fine with it because the goal is to repeal the 20th century at any and all costs. This country is in such deep trouble. But, Tony, you know what? We're not as in deep trouble as you think. Mm-hmm. Maureen Dowd, when I started Pulitzer, she's won two. Now, a quick question for you, Wallace. Now that you're a card-carrying, you have this. Can you get together with fellow Pulitzer winners and decommission and take away, like retroactively,
jacket, like,
take
know,
away. She's won
two.
I'm just pointing this out here. So this is just this morning, breaking news. She has a big, big, massive reporting. This isn't an op-ed on the great Bill Maher, who every week basically is an old man, yells at clouds, and has Ann Coulter and everyone on. He's what's seen as a both-sider. And you know where What a Week falls on the New York Times and both-sider. The thing is called The Truth Hurts, Especially When Bill Maher Dishes It Out. And Bill Maher's truth of late is, those kids today protesting on the college campus are all pro-Hamas, by explicitly pro-Hamas. He doesn't understand if there's any nuance in that issue. As he's talking, he had Pamela Paul and Neely, a woman who wrote another piece about all those out-of-control liberals and how they're lowering the discourse. And the liberals have won, and what are they all so upset about? Donald Trump wanting to put all of us in re-education camps, that kind of thing. But the internet, God bless it, right when this thing came out, let's read. These are some comments, not from us, because Lord knows we don't have anything to say about Modo or Maureen Dowd. So I'll start, Tony. The traditional purpose of jesters was to entertain the aristocracy. So, yeah, this all tracks.
Uh-huh. Wow, man, the perfect storm. This is so many levels deep of insufferable that it almost comes around the other end.
Maher started his incorrect show in 1993, and Dowd has been writing op-eds at the New York Times since 1995. This headline could be from any time since then. Why do we live in a country where Supreme Court justices and New York Times columnists have a lifetime tenure?
I am over 40 years old. At no point in my life has either Bill Maher or Maureen Dowd said anything interesting, thoughtful, useful, or even amusing. They are tipsy country club regulars whose reach should not exceed the room they are in.
If Modo's going to just write the same column over and over, why can't it be the funny one where she got so high on edibles in a Colorado hotel room she couldn't get off the floor? Remember that one where she did her think piece and where she ate an entire candy bar because she didn't read the thing in the wrapper or she'd been existing in a parallel universe, and then wrote an entire column about, whoa, I don't know if they should legalize this stuff. Yeah. Well, it's still one of the all-time champion. I'm just saying, Wallace, you've got some clout here. A retroactive Pulitzer loss is in order.
And this one,
self-awareness, Modo.
Yeah, this one's a callback to the title, to the headline of her piece, which was "The Truth Hurts, Especially When Bill Maher Dishes It Out." And the response was, obviously, I have no personal experience of truth, but a very reliable anonymous high-level source has informed me that it hurts.
And in case that's not enough, in the New York Times, the debate surprise, surprise, surprise. So this is the New York Times, Lisa Lair's, Biden sort of strategically said, no, let's do it. My place or yours. A lot of hamana, hamana, hamana from the Trump thing. So this is how the New York Times reported that. President Biden made a return to political norms a central part of his campaign in 2020, but this move to jettison the traditional presidential debate marks an extraordinary break with those norms and an attempt by his campaign to reconfigure the format in a way that might be more favorable to them.
Now, this opens up the comments from the electorate, from the Worldwide Association of Times readers. One comment, one candidate dispatch an armed gang of Nazis to the Capitol to potentially murder his own vice president, and the other scheduled a debate without using the usual nonprofit middleman. So, both sides are violating norms.
And later on,
that's right.
Wallace tells them here. So a Sleepy Don, the trials have been going on. That's a whole meme here where they're reporting. And this now isn't New York Times headlines. I must confess, this isn't ripped. But
they could have.
I'll beat Trump. And I've always wanted to beat Trump. Yeah. Trump falls asleep in court.
New York Times reports he isn't sleeping. He's resting.
Trump, asleep again.
New York Times. With a quiet, steely determination, Trump focused intensely on the cross-examination.
Trump, actual snoring.
New York Times. His comfort in the courtroom suggests confidence. The case against him is weak.
Trump slides off the chair and onto the floor.
New York Times. Like a game of chess against his fierce adversary, Michael Cohen.
Pretty much. So now let's talk about that a little bit. So we've noticed that, and I'm getting a real flashback here. Wallace, we did some of the weirdest 3 hours of radio ever when we did the murder capital of the world, where we talked about the Santa Cruz killing. So we're sort of living in that period of violence. But the fact that... Johnson, all of the Republican sock puppets, Gates, Boebert, they're all showing up at the courtroom and they're wearing the exact outfits. They're wearing, the men are wearing blue suits and red ties, and they're basically saying all the stuff that Trump is now, even he's figuring out he shouldn't say, so he's handing out the talking points to that. Does this remind you, remember when the Manson girls came to Manson's trial in 1969 and they carved swastikas in their forehead and camped out there? I mean, next it's going to be they're going to carve like a MAGA symbol in their foreheads.
Oh, I don't know. That's rather dark. I was thinking they're actually going for the Ivy League Glee Club look.
Yeah. But no, but seriously, though, the cult, you know, the cult phenomena, which this really is. Well, well-known Beetlejuice audience member, vapor and groper, Lorene Boebert here. Somebody, in some hearings, somebody showed a picture of Trump, and she commented on it, and this is how her take on Trump sleeping.
So every so often, Mr. Garcia, maybe you could just lift up that picture of our President Trump sleeping. As you say, I think he's praying, but if he is sleeping, you know, certainly looks pretty while he sleeps. Maybe it's an endearing moment of prayer, though. I know when I fall asleep on airplanes, you know, my mouth kind of drops open. And, you know, his mouth is kind of tight-lipped. So maybe it's just a somber moment of
I mean, he's sleeping. It's been reported by multiple press outlets.
I was in the courtroom today, and I could see why someone would fall asleep, just like George Conway fell asleep today in the court hearing. You know, it's kind of slow in there. It's not as exciting as the House Oversight Committee, but I just wanted to say that's a lovely picture you have of President Trump, Mr. Garcia. Thank you. And I yield.
Gentlelady.
Yeah, so we'll get to that exciting Oversight Committee thing in the work. Well, Jamie
Raskin. Which is it? He's praying or he's.
Endearing prayer is what he's doing. But yeah, right. I mean, again, how do you keep up in satire? It's why, look, I've never really particularly felt Saturday Night Live is funny, but just like the reality of the thing. How can you top this? Well, Jamie Raskin's got some receipts. He, one of these hearings, sort of laid out about the Trump cult here. And I pride myself in invective, but I must bow my head to the master here. This is Jamie Raskin in the House of Reprehensibles.
Now, our originally scheduled performance was supposed to be at 11 a.m. today, but it was postponed when members of the majority chose to join a mass spiritual pilgrimage to the New York criminal trial of a Florida man, an adjudicated fraudster and rapist, as he faces 34 felony counts of falsifying corporate financial records to cover up $130,000 paid in hush money to a porn star sex partner. Now, although some people are churlishly complaining that members should actually be here to vote on public business and should not have forced a last-minute change in the committee schedule, our colleagues properly demonstrated for all of history their fierce devotion to this clearly reformed, devout, and pious Florida spiritual leader who many supporters are now calling the Messiah from Mar-a-Lago. Of
course. Yeah.
Extra points for working Florida man into it.
Florida man there twice. So this hearing, though, so what happened was there was a hearing at 11, and then it was postponed so all of the flying monkeys could get up to the courtroom and the flying monkeys could get back down. So then the heat really went. And did we mention the phrase bleach blonde, bad built, butch body.
Right, which at the top of the show, yep.
So, as the Washington Post, this was a hearing about the Oversight Committee was discussing, and you can tell how valid this was whether Attorney General Merrick B. Garland should be held in contempt of Congress. This is the same Merrick B. Garland who slow-walked all of the Jack Smith investigation for years, running out the clock, even worse than the Florida judge Aileen Cannon. But I digress. But then we got right down to it this is basically Jasmine Crockett, who's a Democrat from Texas, versus Marjorie Taylor Greene. And again, I think the audio really sort of speaks best to it. So if you can just sort of decipher, I think you'll get a sense of the decorum in this august chamber.
Ms. Green, for 4 minutes and 21 seconds.
Mr. Chair, point of order.
Who's?
It's me.
Ms. Crockett.
I'm just curious, just to better understand your ruling, if someone on this committee then starts talking about somebody's bleach blonde, bad built, butch body, that would not be engaging in personalities, correct?
A what now?
Chairman, I make a motion to strike those words.
I don't think that's
Hold
a
on.
Part
I'm
of it.
I'm trying to find clarification on what quality.
Chairman,
I motion to
I
strike
no
those
idea
words.
What you just said.
We're not gonna do this. Look, you guys earlier literally just
you just voted to do
y'all
it.
Did it first, so you
voted to do it.
Order.
I'm trying to get clarification.
Look, at calm down.
No, because this is what y'all do. So I'm trying to get clarification.
Ms. Crockett, you're not recognized. Ms. Crockett.
I can't hear you with your yelling.
You don't want
calm
me to
down.
Be, no.
And it goes. Yeah.
Take her down.
Yeah. And that was in reaction to, Taylor Greene went there first, basically, and called out Crockett, and then Crockett responded with, again, one more time for that phrase, Tony. You say it real fast three times and click your heels.
Bleach blonde, bad built, butch body.
Thank you very much. So not to be undone by any of this toxic craziness, and when you think of toxic craziness, well, there's one man and name that comes to mind. Well, he's really done it this time. I mean, well this is from a rally last week. Trump is, I think he's talking about a role model or something, but let's just listen to the man himself and we'll talk about it.
Silence of the Lambs. Has anyone ever seen a Silence of the Lambs? The late, great Hannibal Lecter is a wonderful man. He oftentimes would have a friend for dinner. Remember the last scene? Excuse me, I'm about to have a friend for dinner. Is this poor doctor walk by? I'm about to have a friend for dinner, but Hannibal Lecter, congratulations, the late, great Hannibal Lecter. We have people that are being released into our country that we don't want in our country.
So, yeah. Okay, Well, Wallace, again, your arts culture, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning arts cultural guy. First place, Hannibal Lecter's alive. Remember the late, great? No, he's still the fictional character.
The fictional character
is
alive?
A fact, yes. He has not met his end. But you can just, like, the word salad and the, you know, the syphilitic, moth-eaten brain of Trump is all these connections are trying to ramble
this
in.
This is the guy who thinks Biden is senile.
Yeah, well, the thing about this, though, is if the you know, there was a little bit on this where, getting back to the debate, you know, the debate that, remember, Biden is violating all the norms and all that other stuff. In Politico, a top Trump official told Politico, I think Biden walked into a buzzsaw. We got what we wanted. We got debates. Everything is background noise. And people are like, well, you're going to put the Hannibal, Mr. Great American Hannibal Lecter, that guy, in a debate platform. So the conclusions are why Trump agreed. And I think these are all accurate, Tony. Mm-hmm. What are the...
Well, there are a couple of possibilities. One, that Trump is high on his own supply and he's unable to function, let alone debate.
And that the staff, his staff knows better that this will be a disaster, but has to babysit Trump in his delusion that he's going to beat Biden in the debates.
Yeah. Staff are genuinely high on Trump's supply. Politico listened to and quoted one.
And the final one is that, remember John Barron? Yes, the pseudonym of Donald Trump when he used to call tabloids to get himself in. Maybe Donald Trump is the person for Politico.
Trump is Politico's source?
Yeah, well, could
I thought you're not supposed to reveal sources.
Well, you know, we like to play music.
You're the Pulitzer winner there.
How many times have we hung this label on you in this last 50 minutes here?
What's the rule on that? Can a source be revealed?
If it's John Barron, yes, of course.
There you go. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I got a song that goes out, actually. You can't go wrong with great garage band music. And this goes from an album, I'll give you the title. It's called Oozings from the Inner Mind. Mind being spelled M-Y-N-D-E. So we're talking about serious psychedelia. But this is, I don't know, when I think of Donald Trump, this particular song that crossed my path last week does come to mind.
Stuff he had.
group called Wings, not Paul McCartney's Wings, and I'm sure the members of Wings who brought us General Bringdown were probably pretty...
Should be the anthem of What a Week.
General Bringdown. Yeah, hope we'd be hearing that
rather
song.
Rather specific Bringdowns, actually.
Well, Wallace, we have a rare opportunity here since every week, and did I mention Pulitzer Prize-winning Lookout? You kind of go through what's coming
Wallace
up in the
being
next
here
week.
Representing the entire staff of Lookout. The award went to the entire staff of Lookout Santa Cruz.
But he's the living embodiment, just like the...
He's the one we were
just
able
like
to con
way,
into
just
coming
like
in
the,
here
the wafer is
Saturday
the symbolic
morning.
Embodiment of Christ. He is the corporal embodiment of that particular...
Transubstantiation of, live.
What's going on in Santa Cruz next week, he asked.
A couple things having to do with Lookout. In particular, we're having a party for our members to celebrate the Pulitzer. It is for members of Lookout and prospective members. I mean, if you're interested in becoming a member, you can certainly register and come. It's next Wednesday, May 22nd at our beautiful downtown offices. And one thing I really want to underscore is that I am beginning my monthly trivia contest again in June, and this is something we've done for a couple of years now, and it's a lot of fun, and we have a good time putting it together. I really try to reach for something that is A, local, B, interesting, C, isn't just reading questions off a Trivial Pursuit card, but really kind of trying to reach something where people have fun and kind of learn something. And it's at Abbott Square. It's going to be the first Wednesday of every month throughout the summer, starting on June the 5th, first Wednesday of the month at Abbott Square at 6:30. It's free. Please register. Please come in. We would love to have you. There's prizes. There's laughs. There's all kinds of good stuff happening.
Give us an example. Give us one question. Come on, hit us. Hit us.
Hit us with a trivia.
Let's go.
Well, here's a question I had last year.
All right.
What is the only news organization in Santa Cruz County to win a Pulitzer Prize?
Oh, come on. The Watsonville Pajaronian.
Well, what a week, right?
No, the Register Pajaronian.
The Register Pajaronian back in 1956.
1956.
I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that they exposed a
DA? District attorney and a Confederate, thanks to a wiretap that was provided by the sheriff. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. The sheriff helped the paper, and they got the DA to quit, and they put a Confederate in jail.
Well, we're going to get put in jail, a media jail, if we don't mention the single most important event that's happening in Santa Cruz, I think, all year. And that would be, what is today and what's going on today down at the boardwalk?
Oh, the Giant Dipper's 100th birthday, the centennial of the great old Giant Dipper. I wrote a big story about it last week. The boardwalk folks allowed me to walk the tracks, the only outsider, according to them, who is able to walk the tracks.
These creosote-soaked, or bolts falling out with every footstep? I'm just kind of curious.
I walked it with the maintenance guys who are inspecting it every morning and looking at the vulnerable spots, and it was a blast. It was amazing to kind of experience the Giant Dipper on that level. It really struck me how this is something built 100 years ago, and of course they replace all the wood and stuff, but the technology is the same as it was in the 1920s. This is the essence of something that's not broken, so why fix it? And that's what makes it a great ride, is because the experience you have today is pretty much the same experience they had back when Calvin Coolidge was president. And
trivia on the boardwalk, wasn't it built in like record time? They just put it, and they didn't slap it together.
No, at the time, I think that was normal time. Yeah, it was built in a couple of months, right?
Right.
Yeah.
You mean the boardwalk?
Yeah,
the Dipper.
No, the Dipper itself. The thing was built like with rapid, in a couple of months.
Yeah,
with
a
huge work crew hammering up the. What's it made of? I assume it would be redwood, and it's got to be made of some semi.
I don't think it's redwood. I think it's pine, actually.
I bet it's all been replaced, though. You know, and
it's all been
over
replaced.
The years.
It
just regenerates itself.
Could it be built today? I mean, could somebody walk down to the county planning department and put in an application to build a wooden roller coaster today?
There are wooden roller coasters that are being built and sold as kind of throwback, kind of retro attractions. But the norm today is to build it out of steel and to have a lot of computer technology. There's not a computer chip in the entire Giant Dipper anywhere. It's all mechanical.
When you were walking the tracks, did you find anything interesting?
I was too much focused on my vertigo.
Well, speaking of vertigo, it is time for our boot heels not to wander on top of the boardwalk, but to wander off. This is What a Week. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz, KSQT Prunedale. Well, Wallace, again, congratulations to everyone at Lookout.
Thank you, Eric.
This is a huge win for our community,
yes.
And attention must be paid. And if we've paid it, I could keep paying it forever, but it's just great work.
Well, quickly, we forgot to mention that the fireworks are happening tonight at the boardwalk. That's
9 p.m.
the
tonight. Yes. Fireworks at 9 p.m. Yes. tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, in just a few seconds, it's going to be time for the Grateful Dead Zone on KSQD.
He's Eric Nelson. I'm Tony Russomano.
And here come the Deadheads.